Portfolio Construction Forum presents Linda Jakobsen, February 2017.
Graham has asked me to discuss what the region looks like in the era of Trump and how specifically the Trump presidency is going to affect us all. I'll start out by using one word. It's going to be turbulent. I see this turbulence as really affecting us here in Australia and throughout the region. I'll begin my narrative from November of this year. I think quietly, very quietly, in Beijing, they were hoping that Hillary Clinton would become the president. No, they did not think that. Why? She meant predictability, which they usually like, but Hillary is well known for much harsher views on China than her would have been predecessor, Barack Obama. They didn't want Hillary because they don't get along with Hillary. There's a bit of bad blood from some of the things she did as Secretary of State. They quietly thought, well, a businessman, maybe we can do deals with him. Above all, they thought that Trump would not pay any attention to the Asia Pacific and they could focus themselves on strengthening their own position in the region. I take you back a few years. 9/11 changed the whole dynamics of the US-China relationship. At the time, it was quite tense. There had been the EP3 incident. No one really knew where President Bush was taking the relationship. 9/11 came, China was needed. China's help was needed in the war against terrorism. And most importantly, from the point of Beijing, America shifted its focus away from the Asia Pacific to the Middle East, and China was able to launch into a diplomatic charm offensive and really strengthen its position here in its own region. I think this is precisely why, quietly, Beijing was rooting for Trump. They thought he'd be pretty aloof as a president as far as the Asia Pacific was concerned. But 1 month after the inauguration, what do we have? We have an impulsive American president who knows little about the world, he knows little about diplomacy, and indeed he has no vision at all of US foreign policy, not only generally speaking, but especially in this region. He only has one mission. He wants very much to increase jobs. He wants to make America great again. But I think that the provocative comments that Trump made as president-elect, and now since becoming president, some of the decisions he has taken, have really given rise to deep anxiety in Beijing. I would say that it's really rattled nerves in China. Now, Trump's remarks already as a president-elect were unsettling, there's no doubt about it. After then becoming president, he went on to snub Beijing in several ways. Last week, he finally sent a letter wishing the Chinese president a Happy New Year. It only came 2 weeks after the fact. Just imagine Malcolm Turnbull, 2 weeks after Australia Day, receiving a letter wishing the Australians a happy Australia Day. Then finally, he did want to have a telephone conversation with President Xi Jinping. This conversation took place last Friday. The official readout from the White House described the conversation as extremely cordial. But please note, the official readout about the conversation between Donald Trump and Malcolm Turnbull was also very cordial, and we know really what took place during that conversation. So if you compare the situation now with the one in US-China ties under Barack Obama, we see a stark difference. For whatever problems Barack every once in a while had with Xi Jinping, it was certainly a relationship which was on an even keel most of the time, and above all, it was predictable. There's about $600 billion of trade between the two countries. There's about 2.3 million Chinese who annually visit the United States. There's 300,000 Chinese studying in American universities. So economically, also in the realm of investment, people-to-people ties, these countries certainly are on a solid foundation. I like to also say that the political relationship between Washington and Beijing has been, until Trump, really a mature relationship. Why do I say that? I say that because there's been numerous crises, there's been numerous incidents, but somehow the two sides have always managed to skillfully defuse the tensions and get the relationship back on track. There are about 100 official consultations or dialogues between the two countries. On any given day, there are dozens of American officials in Beijing. There are dozens of Chinese officials in Washington. The two countries really do know each other, and they have cooperated a lot, despite the media headlines about anxiety in the South China Sea. So I personally think of US-China relations as mature enough, stable enough, solid enough to endure some friction. I think that Beijing's restraint during the time when Donald Trump was a president-elect really showed the maturity of the relationship. But I think the next 12 to 18 months, the months that Graham has asked me to look at, are bound to be fraught with tension. They're going to be unpredictable, and they're going to be volatile. I think that this president will severely strain the relationship, and if it continues for the next 4 years, even this, what I call rather mature and solid relationship, is bound to unravel. I think there are a number of risks that could derail the relationship. I'm going to very briefly go through five of them: Taiwan, South China Sea, trade, North Korea, and Japan. So let's begin with Taiwan. Taiwan and the One China policy is the most consequential issue in the US-China relationship. Trump alarmed Beijing by taking a congratulatory call from the Taiwanese president soon after the election. He broke, I think, four, if not five, decades of diplomacy, of diplomatic rules. Later in an interview, he said that the One China policy is up for negotiation. But to the leadership in Beijing, there is nothing negotiable about the One China policy. Taiwan's eventual reunification with the motherland, with the mainland, is absolutely fundamental to the legitimacy of the Communist Party. It also kind of unleashes huge waves of nationalist outbursts in China among what we would call normal citizens if anyone questions the thought that China and Taiwan, in other words, the mainland and Taiwan, wouldn't one day unify. Put it very bluntly, I think this is the one issue that China indeed is willing to go to war over if necessary. Trump has pretty strongly hinted that, you know, Taiwan could be a bargaining chip, maybe to gain some advantages, maybe to gain some advantages for the United States in trade. If he did that, it would antagonize Beijing. I think it would create a really violent reaction from China. China has already established certain red lines about Taiwan. I just ask everyone to recall back in 1995, Bill Clinton granted a Taiwanese president a visa. One can say that Beijing went ballistic and shot missiles over Taiwan. United States responded, Clinton sent in an aircraft carrier, and we finally had a defused situation because Beijing literally backed down. Beijing is not going to back down anymore. We're not living in 1995. China is a lot stronger than it was 20 years ago. I know that this sounds quite pessimistic. I'm known to usually be a little bit optimistic on these issues, but I am at the moment quite pessimistic. I think a Cuban missile crisis type incident, type situation could easily be in front of us in the next 18 months. I think averting conflict over Taiwan will depend above all on very level heads prevailing on both sides, both in Washington and in Beijing. I have no doubt that there'll be recommendations by hardliners in both capitals, which could lead the two countries to conflict. Washington seems to have now taken, thank goodness, a step back. Trump repeated that the United States will respect the One China policy in his last Friday conversation with Xi Jinping. But remember, how you define the One China policy has always been open for misinterpretation or open for disagreement between either Taipei and Beijing or Beijing and Washington. So just because he said that doesn't yet mean that we're in clear waters about the One China policy. The second major risk I see to a possible unraveling of US-China relations is in the South China Sea. The new Secretary of State, Tillerson, he made comments during his confirmation hearing that the US should deny China access to the artificial islands in the South China Sea. These were pretty alarming comments. If you take them absolutely literally, this would mean enforcing a blockade, which is an act of war. Since those remarks, I would say the Trump administration has step by step taken back this rhetoric a few notches. And last week, we heard Defense Secretary Mattis, when he was in Japan, saying that the United States, of course, should explore all diplomatic options before using military force. Tillerson also has clarified that he meant that only if the United States' interests were directly challenged would the United States use military force in the South China Sea. But in private, Mattis, Tillerson, several other top advisors have made it very clear that the Trump administration is moving to a much more confrontational approach towards China, generally speaking. I think they've for years advocated a much tougher response to China than we saw under Obama. It's quite possible, in my view, that Trump could unleash some rash operation, and that would force the Chinese to lash back. In a really worst-case scenario, we could see a contained military conflict during the next 4 years between the United States and China. One also has to remember, and that's something I've spoken about here at this forum previously, is that a conflict can also arise due to an unforeseen crisis, an unforeseen incident, an accident. At the moment, there are indeed measures to handle these situations. And during the Obama administration, I felt quite confident that both sides would adhere to agreements that have been made about how to defuse a crisis. But I don't think I feel quite as reassured at the moment. I think communication under Trump can easily spin out of control. Many of the people that he's appointed to top positions have for years advocated that China is taking advantage of America. Obama was too weak, too soft, and now it's time to push back. I hear this mantra being repeated time and again now in Washington. Unnecessarily, China has got its way for 8 long years. Enough is enough. But very ironically, this is precisely what the elites in China are saying. They feel that for three plus decades, because of the country's need to modernize, because of the country's need to rely on foreign investment and know-how, they have kowtowed to the West. They have kowtowed especially to the United States. And now is the time to push back. So there's a similar set of attitudes, very disturbingly, in both capitals. Furthermore, I'm not sure anymore which is more worrying. Is it Trump's unpredictability, his quite emotional reaction to events, or is it the hardline anti-China people that he has appointed to his cabinet? Because Trump, I think however much his advisors might in some situations try and restrain him, is impulsive. He will react emotionally if there was a crisis. For example, remember the drone that fell in the sea and the Chinese went and picked it up. I think Trump in that situation would react very emotionally. Is that worse than his advisors intentionally devising a strategy which would push back on China so hard that it would provoke a bad reaction from Beijing? I'm not sure which is worse. Okay, next, there's a possibility of a trade war. Trump said many times during the campaign that he would declare China a currency manipulator. We all know this. He has not done so. He has long criticized the US trade deficit with China and has always said that the United States is being cheated, quote unquote, by China. Of course, I think most people in this room know that Trump's views are based on a very outdated interpretation of the Chinese economy, especially about manipulation and currency manipulation. For years now, the People's Bank of China have actually been propping up the yuan, not keeping it low, for the sake of their own economy and for their own advantage. In relative terms, the US-China trade deficit is actually shrinking. And as many, many economists of different persuasions have argued, it's robots, it's automation, which are impacting on American manufacturing jobs. It's not tariffs that the Chinese imports, tariffs on Chinese imports would have anything to do about if Trump would impose them. In the case that Trump did impose tariffs, as he has threatened to do, I'm sure that China is going to respond in kind. It's already spoken about possibly imposing tariffs on soybeans or commercial aircraft. So I think that it's not in anyone's interests, of course, to see that happen. It would be disastrous if the world's largest economy and the world's second largest economy would engage in a trade war. Certainly it would be disastrous for a region like the Asia Pacific, which is economically so interdependent. It would also really hurt China. China is going through a very painful transition. I think it would affect stability in China if there was a trade war, and it was perceived by Chinese people that Trump is imposing pain on Chinese people through a trade war, and this would make it even more difficult for the president of China, Xi Jinping, not to respond in kind with equally tough measures against the United States. This sort of tit for tat could ultimately lead to a really severe diplomatic crisis, and who knows, even conflict with the United States. Then let's turn to North Korea. In Donald Trump's view, Beijing has not done enough to push and pressure its so-called ally. It has a unique position to influence Pyongyang, and it has not done so to pressure Pyongyang into abandoning its nuclear program. Now, I think it's fair to say that this is an accurate and reasonable accusation. Beijing is so worried about the turmoil that would follow if the North Korean regime collapsed that despite the fact that it really does want to see a denuclearized Korean peninsula, it has not turned off the gas, it has not stopped food exports to North Korea and brought the regime down. This is the one issue where actually it's possible that the United States and China could find ways to cooperate in a new mode because of Trump, because both of them really do want to see a denuclearized North Korea. And certainly the missile test on Sunday by the North Koreans will either push them together or push them apart. It really remains to be seen. And then finally, there are, of course, the ongoing tensions between China and Japan over the disputed Senkaku Diaoyu Islands. I mention them not that I feel that this is a pressure point that's about to erupt tomorrow, but we shouldn't forget the animosity between China and Japan. Japan has a difficult time understanding, acknowledging, accepting that China has risen to the point that Japan will very soon be number two in many ways, not only economically. And this sore point, this disputed little area in the East China Sea, over seven uninhabited islands, can always flare up when either side wants to use it as a weapon against the other. And of course, the United States has yet again last week, when Defense Minister Mattis visited Japan, said that those islands are part of the US-Japan Defense Treaty, and the United States will look upon any attack on those islands as an attack on Japan, which would evoke the defense treaty. But as I mentioned, the likelihood of conflict on this issue in the next 12 to 18 months is, in my opinion, very low. So these potentially explosive issues, coupled with the uncertainty of Trump's foreign policy, generally speaking, and the unpredictability of his character, certainly have a lot of implications for our own region, including for supply chains, including for the markets. As I already mentioned, the Asia-Pacific is incredibly interdependent economically. There are some 150 FTAs in this region. As of last year, 57% of intra-Asia trade, total 57% of total trade in the region was intra-Asia trade. Obviously, if there was turbulence in the US-China relationship, this would not only impact some of the major countries, even the middle powers, but even smaller countries, which are part of those supply chains, Cambodia, Burma, Bangladesh come to mind. The whole region would certainly be affected. A maritime conflict would disrupt shipping. It would certainly see insurance premiums soaring. And then in addition to the material costs, which are obviously easier to calculate, there'll be political costs. Though a lot of analysts love to lump countries in this region together into the pro-American basket and the pro-China basket, for example, Laos and Cambodia are always in the pro-China basket. This sort of stark division actually ignores, in some cases, substantial friction between countries in the same basket. And heightened US-China ties are just simply going to make some of those tensions even worse. I think one can say that no government, including the government in Canberra, wants to see a situation where they are forced to choose between the United States and China. No one either wants to see the United States neglect this region. Most countries in this region face precisely the same dilemma as Australia. They rely for the most part on America for their security, and they rely for the most part on their prosperity and their standard of living on China. Many countries would be forced, literally forced, to take a stance either for or against if there was an open conflict between the United States and China. I think even animosity would strain relations in this region and would cause a lot of anxiety across the capitals in this region. So in this time of unpredictability, what do I think Canberra should do? I think Canberra should reach out to Beijing. I've argued this publicly. I feel strongly that Australia has nothing to lose by doubling down on its relationship with Beijing in every manner. It should be dispersing ministers and officers and businessmen and scientists and students and analysts like me to Beijing to find out what the Chinese are thinking and encouraging the Chinese that there are new ways to develop the region without the United States. Some say, oh, Linda, this is going to cause a lot of anxiety in Washington. That's not what Australia should be doing. But I feel that the Australians would not have to compromise any of their values. any of their principles if they were indeed to all relay a similar message. We want to take Australia-China relations to a new level. And in conclusion, as long as Washington and Beijing get on with each other, it's been easy for Australians to convince themselves that, you know, we can have a friend in Beijing and we can have an ally in Washington, D.C. This was, by the way, Julia Gillard's favorite expression on foreign policy. But in this era of volatility, it isn't going to be possible. It's glaringly apparent that Canberra is simply going to have to forge a new type of relationship with Washington, but it's also going to have to forge a very new type of relationship with Beijing.